One. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Talking Some Sense, Season 1, Episode 1, the first show. I'm Jake from Grind Like... I'm Jake, also known as Grind Like Yogs. I write for Overtime Heroics, and my Twitter is Grind Like Yogs or at Some Sense. Today on the show, I have a guest, a very, very special guest, a good friend of mine, Matthew Jacobson. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Ayo, yeah, I'm the YouTuber formerly known as the AZ Sports Guy.
Do you have any other projects on the go right now you want to mention?
I do some writing for the Puck Authority, but that's really about it going on, that and the YouTube channel.
Weren't you with Ruby ISS for a little while, too?
I was their video producer and whatnot, and then I just kind of needed to step away. They're great people.
Oh, yeah. Anyways, let's get right into it. So today I'll be talking about some Sens news, Sens drama, because we all know there's always Sens drama. I'll talk a little bit more about Ronnie NHL, some stats, standings, and some other things. Like I'll be and then there's the If I Were in Charge segment, and finally we will talk about the Arizona Coyotes, and that is primarily why Matthew was here today. So let's get all started, and with the Sens update. The Senators might finally be for sale. As some of you may know or may not know, there was a rumor that Robert Kraft, NFL owner, I forget what team he owns. Who does he own again?
I think it's the New England Patriots. Wasn't he the one that had that controversy in the offseason about the sex acts and the massage parlors or whatever that was?
Maybe. I'm not too sure. I'm not too familiar about him. But apparently he's another not-so-famous or infamous sports franchise owner in the world. And apparently he was going to buy the Senators, but that turned out to be just another hoax. It's just a hoax. And the girl, I think her name was Christina. Christina Kraft or whatever her name was not related to Robert as a lot of people thought they were. Everybody thought that she was his grandson or whatever. And so what happened there was she posted on her Snapchat while she was in the Canadian Tire Center, and with three emojis, I think it was a money emoji, a handshaking emoji, and hush hush emoji, I guess you would call it. But yeah, anyways,
can I just take 1 second to just comment on it, what a time to be alive that the ownership of a sports franchise is now up for grabs via emojis and like Snapchat.
Yeah. So basically, it was basically inferred that the Ottawa Senators are, yes, they are for sale, but not openly. So basically, the best way to describe that is when you're selling your house, but you're not putting a for sale sign. You're basically just...
Well, you're not putting it on the open market. You just have one or two buyers in mind or whatever, and negotiating with them.
Exactly. Like, you're listing the offers. So that's basically all there is for that. Next, well, really, now that I mention it, I'm going to have to really talk about my personal prediction, who will buy the Senators is. In my dreams, what I want to happen is I want Chris Phillips, Chris Neal, Dan Offerton, and a couple other guys to join together to buy the Ottawa Senators off Eugene Melnyk. But we all know that's not going to happen. That's a match, like that's a dream team, if you will, for me. But realistically, what I personally think will happen is maybe it was last year or the year before. It was rumored that Guy Laliberté, he's known for Cirque du Soleil, and apparently he's been wanting to buy the Senators for a little while now. So I hope that's going to happen.
You want my personal prediction, because it seems like the hockey gods hate Senators fans. Donald Trump's probably going to buy them.
Go ahead. Oh, Donald Trump.
Because remember, Senators fans can never just have a day to just be happy.
I mean, yeah, crazier things have happened. Like that guy who owned the New York Islanders for 4 months.
Wait, when did that happen?
It's at some point in the 90s, I think it was. The owner of the Islanders sold his team to some other guy who said his net worth was $120 million or something like that. And turns out he only had a couple million, so he was never able to pay up. So he owned the team for 4 years before losing to bankruptcy, basically. I cannot remember the name of the guy, but he even said himself, my proudest moment of my life was basically owning the Islanders for 4 months. You can never take that away from him, essentially.
I mean, you can't take that away from him, but I'm going to go ahead and fact check that and tweet it at you. @MJuggleFiddleZ, by the way, so I can get my Twitter handle on there.
Yeah, hashtag. Go ahead. I know it happened. I read about it a little while ago. I don't remember who exactly it was, though. But yeah.
All right, bud.
Pardon me?
I was like, all right, bud.
Yeah. Anyways, next off is the Vladislav Nevesnikov trade. Did you hear about that one?
Did not. I have not.
No? Okay. So what happened was, is I forget what day of the week, but it was, I think it was just after the second. So after the New York game, ironically, Nevesnikov played for the New York Rangers. The Ottawa Senators traded Nick Ebert, just a 25-year-old AHL defenseman, I guess, and a fourth-round pick in 2021 for Vladislav Nevesnikov. And I think that is a wicked good trade, considering that Nevesnikov has been rumored to be in trades for a while now, and I'm pretty sure he requested a trade, and it finally happened. It's funny it happened in a game just after game between both teams, but it happened. And he's wearing number 90 for the Senators this year. And I'll talk more about where I think he should be in the lineup a little later. But essentially, he is a capable top six winger, as he was in Tampa, and he was that essentially in New York for a little bit before he got injured or something like that.
My first thought was when you said he's wearing number 90, is wasn't that Spezza's number? I was like, wait,
no.
I think Spezza was 19 in Ottawa, and he was a 90 in Dallas.
Yeah, exactly. And back to 19 in Toronto.
Oh, have they even played him yet? Because the home opener they sat in, which was kind of BS, because he took a hardcore discount to go back.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's making $700,000 in the NHL, and I think he could still make at least $1 to $2 million easily.
I was going to say at least two or three. While he's not, you know, Ottawa Senators Spezza, he's still a talented guy. He still has at least a season or two in the tank.
Oh, yeah. He's one of the best faceoff guys in the NHL. And while I talk about that, I find it a little funny. A little while ago, Mitch Marner talked about he wanted to get better at faceoffs in case he had to go to take faceoffs. So he told the media that he was going to learn faceoffs from Spezza. And it was really funny because next team practice, he spent probably like half an hour just working with Spezza with faceoffs.
Really? So it looks like Mitch Marner is trying to be worth his contract. Yeah. I can respect that. I will respect that.
And I really respect
Mitchell Marner. He's at 1+ point with me right now.
And Jason Spezza is really doing his job as a veteran presence in the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think that he's going to probably become a coach at some point, or a team trainer or whatever, wherever he does decide after he retires. I think he's going to continue staying in the hockey
world. I think if the Senators can get rid of Eugene Melnyk and trade and sell this team, Spezza might come back.
Yeah.
It wasn't the reason that Alfredson also didn't retire in a Sens jersey.
What happened was, Alfredson, in the last year of his career, he knew he was never going to win the Cup with Ottawa. So what he did is he requested a trade. And if I remember correctly, they didn't trade him. They tried trading him, but he eventually just signed in Detroit during free agency or something like that. And he announced his retirement at the end of the year. But what he did was he didn't retire until he could sign a 1-day contract in Ottawa. So he skated in warm-ups and whatever. He didn't play the game, but he was a Senator. He retired as an Ottawa Senator. Just like how Cam Ward is retiring as a Carolina retired as a Carolina Hurricane. He signed a 1-day.
Except for Cam Ward didn't get to hit the ice. He just walked in the office and signed a 1-day contract and shook some hands.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I get it. Nice. It's always good to see, especially when guys spend 98% of their career somewhere, they get to retire there.
Exactly. I respect that. I'd like to see Jason Spezza do that, but I don't think he will, because I'm pretty sure he left Ottawa on not the best terms with Melnyk. But hey, who is Ottawa with Melnyk, you know?
Yeah, I mean, but on top of that, I remember, and this is just from my personal recollection, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but because Ottawa had some pretty decent teams, and also I think Spezza was on the team that went to the Cup Final.
Yep.
Or one game away from the Cup Final.
No.
But,
No, he left the team in 2013 or something. No, 2014. 2014, 2015 is when he left the team to go to Dallas. But he was on the team that went in the Stanley Cup Finals against Anaheim.
All right, because I remember that It seemed like a lot of the media was trying to blame him for most of Ottawa's shortcomings when it wasn't his fault.
Yeah.
And I think that wasn't the reason why he wanted to leave, is like he just got tired of dealing with it.
Yeah. See, the thing with Spezza was when he was in Ottawa, he's more of an, if I remember correctly, he's more of an egotistical player. So he's kind of like Phil Kessel, where he just, well, all he wanted to do was play hockey. He didn't want to talk to the media necessarily. He didn't want to be as much of a leader as he was. He just wanted to play hockey.
So like Alex Galchenyuk just wants to play hockey to left alone.
Yeah, essentially. Or Phil Kessel.
Or Phil Kessel. Phil.
Yeah. And next thing is the Senators on opening night, they announced that they will be retiring number 4, Chris Phillips's number, on February 18th, 2019. I know just before we started recording, you didn't know about this, so I just filled you on quickly. Chris Phillips leads the Ottawa Senators in games played of 1,179 games, one ahead of Daniel Alfredson, 1,178. He has Chris Phillips had 71 goals in his career, all of Ottawa, which ranks for 23rd amongst all Ottawa Senators players in history. And with 217 assists in the Ottawa uniform, he's ranked as 7th in all-time assists. And with his 288 points, he is the 12th highest point scorer in Ottawa history. That really resonates with me. That just goes to show Ottawa. Ottawa's had good teams, but Ottawa's never had the biggest amount of superstars. Sure, we've had Marian Hossa, Jason Spezza, Alexei Yashin, Daniel Alfredson, Erik Karlsson. But other than that, oh, and Danny Heatley, a couple other names like that. But other than that, we've always been basically a depth oriented team. If 288 points will make you just shy of top 10 points in a center's uniform, that shows something. Right? I'm assuming Matt had some technical difficulties, so I'll just keep talking. So, in my opinion, I think that this, it's kind of a mixed feeling towards me. Yes, I love that they're showing respects to Chris Phillips. I love that he's their franchise leader in games played, and he could have probably moved on to be captain if he wanted to, or if Daniel Alfredson wasn't in a team for so long, or whatever. I think he would have been a good captain. And he's always a great player for Ottawa. He wasn't necessarily flashy some guys, as I mentioned, not even 300 career points, but as a defenseman, still pretty good. He was a stay-at-home defenseman. That's what he was, and he was a good one at that. He was easily a high-end top four defenseman, in my opinion. Not necessarily an elite top two guy, but he was always like a high-end top four. And that's it on that. And I think it's cool that they're retiring it, but like at the same time, if he would have done this on any other team, like for example, Tampa Bay Lightning, for example, that's not retire worthy. Just because he did what he did in Ottawa, it's number retire worthy, but anywhere else, not necessarily. And while I make the liaison to next point, I'll talk about some stats, their games played. And while I was researching stats, I noticed that Thomas Chabot is 5th in the NHL right now in time on ice. He's top 5 in time on ice with 25 minutes and 58 seconds on average per night so far. I know it is only a third game of the season, but that just goes to show how much Thomas Chabot is being relied on. And another interesting fact is that Nikita Zaitsev is 21st in ice time with 24 minutes and 30 seconds average per night, which it means Ottawa's top pair is essentially Thomas Chabot and Zaitsev, which I like. And I like that Ottawa's really relying on the best defenseman on the team there. It just goes to show that Ottawa, that DJ Smith trusts Chabot, which I like a lot. And yeah. Is your mic working now?
Yeah, it's working.
Okay, yeah. So did you hear all what I just mentioned?
I heard a good amount of it. I heard Chabot is essentially playing half of a hockey game every night.
Basically.
I mean, If he's playing up to the level and he's comfortable with doing that, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But like, my point is, I love how the coach is trusting him that much.
I mean, it's better than like we're a team, go out there.
Yeah. Pierre Dorion, my goodness. But yeah, it's like, it's actually fun fact. Who do you think is number one in ice time in the NHL right now?
Can you at least give me a hint on position?
Defense.
Defense. I don't know why I want to say Nate Schmidt because Vegas relies on him heavily.
I don't think he's even in the top 30.
Fuck. Sorry. It's damn. Okay. Damn, bud.
Yeah. But yeah, number one is Brent Burns with just over 26 minutes. And like a second less on average is Erik Karlsson.
EK65, your dude.
Yeah, I love Erik Karlsson.
Who's been playing better so far this season to start than I'd say most of last season.
Pardon me?
Our bet's still active, bud.
Yeah, it is. Yep. So for people who missed that bet here, let me quickly get it. The bet was on my Twitter. It's my pinned tweet on my personal Twitter. And the tweet and the bet is if Erik Karlsson does not get nominated for the Norris Trophy this year, if he does get nominated, Matthew must lick the ground and send a video of me it.
I don't remember agreeing to those terms.
Dude, look on my tweet. And look. If he does not, if he doesn't live up to his contract or gets hurt, doesn't get nominated or whatever, I have to make a video talking about how the AZ Sports guy is ridiculously smart and knows more about hockey.
Yeah.
I'm reading. So what I said, once Erik Karlsson wins Norris next year or gets nominated for it, I want a video of you licking the ground. I'll accept that as your apology.
I must have been very confident that he's not going to live up to that contract.
Do you still feel the same, or do you feel any different?
He's off to a much better start this year than I think he played pretty much all of last year.
No, and he only played like 50 games last year.
The only thing is that, especially early on in seasons, guys that are injury prone can still play fantastic and still get injured. So I'm still not exactly confident he's going to end up like keeping it up or being able to stay on the ice personally.
But like, I think that Erik Karlsson is even injured. I think he's better than 90% of the NHL. As he's just that, he's that good of a skater. He's that powerful of a playmaker. Like he's literally the equivalent of a quarterback. Basically, he starts the play. He dominates whenever he's on the ice. Of course, he doesn't backskate, but like, he doesn't need to backskate. The best way to describe Erik Karlsson's defensive game is easily how he defends is he doesn't let the other team get the puck.
That's always the best defense, is not letting him possess it. As far as quarterbacks go, he's better than Keith Yandel. I can say that with confidence.
Oh yeah, and like Keith Yandel is a really, in my opinion, is a really good. Offensive defenseman to come, like they play a similar, in my opinion, they play a similar game, but Erik Karlsson is just on another level.
My problem with Keith Yandel on a fundamental level is after watching him for so many years when I was a season ticket holder, is Keith Yandel is a terrible defenseman. Every game he'll have one or two good defensive plays, but I'd much rather have him be a left wing because then you get to use that offensive capabilities. You can still use him as the quarterback on your power play because he can still play the same right side defensive spot,
yeah,
and get you the same amount of points, but without having to rely upon him for defense because he's just not a defenseman. Or at least Erik Karlsson is an elite level defender.
Yeah, like Erik Karlsson, his defensive game will not be as good as a guy like Marko Vlasic or Ryan Suter, even Mark Mathot. But the beauty, pardon me,
or Zbigniew McCulloch.
Oh my god! Oh my god! The point is he's not elite defensive-wise, but he holds his own. And that's all really that you need, really.
Pretty much with what he produces, yeah.
Exactly. In like 53 games it was last year, he had 45 points. Injured. Pardon me?
Which is still good?
Yeah, it's still wicked good. I gotta find a calculator. Give me a sec. I don't have a calculator. I'll do that later. But like, off the top of my head, he was basically on pace for 60 to 70 points. He would have played the entire year healthy. It's pretty astonishing. And as we're recording this, I just got a notification that Capo Caco just got his first NHL goal.
Really? I would have thought he would have scored it already.
No. Hughes.
Congratulations, Capo Caco.
Pardon me?
Congratulations, Capo Caco.
Yeah. Hughes and Caco haven't necessarily had the most dominating first couple of games in their career yet. Like, it's they're rookies. Like, I expected it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But like they're just, it's just confidence really. They're gonna start producing. It's just a matter of finding their game.
I don't agree with like the hockey guy all the time, but I think the best thing when it comes to like Jack Hughes is that people are just expecting him to produce too early.
Yeah.
And he's playing fine. It's just he has to get used to the NHL game. But
exactly.
He's not holding anyone back. He's just playing fine.
Yeah, he's playing fine. He's not necessarily getting enough. We're showing he's proving fine, but he is playing fine. And like once both those guys get, I'll say, comfortable, they're gonna start producing. It's just a matter of when. And like, just a quick factor that I have on the top of my head right now, Joe Thornton, how many points do you think he had in his rookie year?
I think Joe Thornton had like less than 20. He was not lighting it up.
He had 3 points in his rookie year.
Yeah, what?
In a basically a full year, I think it was, he had 3 points in his rookie year.
Yeah, he did not light the league up, and then look what happened.
Now he's like 40. Is one of, if not the greatest playmakers of all time.
Ooh, I don't know if I'd say one of the greatest playmakers of all time, but he's definitely a really good player that's still playing.
Yeah, he's a wicked playmaker. And like last year, people are saying he's starting to decline. Yes, but the dude still scored 50 points last year. And he's like,
when you're in your 40s and you're still producing more than Jaromir Jagr, I think you're fine.
Yeah. That kind of offends me because I'm a big Jagr fan.
I know, that's why I threw it out there.
I know you did. Yeah. Yeah.
Look, I love Jags. Jags is great. He should still be in the NHL. I would take him on Arizona. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah, same. I would even take him on Ottawa. Like, in the lineup, I'll talk about it later. But, like, in a good rebuild, yes, you need. At the same time, you need the old guys to mentor young guys. I think that Jagr would be amazing on Ottawa. Even if just on the fourth line, replacing a guy like Bobby Ryan or even Scott Sabourin. But that's a story for another, for next in a couple segments. But, yeah. Anyways, yeah. So, let's talk about the games.
Sends lineup for, like, 5 minutes and eat some time up so we can hear your beautiful voice.
Yeah. But yeah, the Sens so far have been miserable. In 3 games this year, they have lost all 3 games. And if I'm looking at my standings, only 3 teams in the NHL have not won a game yet. Do you want to try to guess those teams? Okay, I'm guessing his mic stopped working. Anyways, the 3 teams who have not won a game this year so far. Obviously, the Ottawa Senators. Then there's the Chicago Blackhawks and Minnesota. Blackhawks, yeah. Chicago Blackhawks and Minnesota Wild.
Whatever you just said.
Okay. I basically just told them that there are only 3 teams in the NHL have not won a game yet. Ottawa, Chicago, and Minnesota.
Wait, Chicago hasn't won a game yet?
Nope. Yeah.
Well, damn.
Yeah. And people are already calling for the head of Jeremy Colton, which I think is absolutely ridiculous.
3 games? Are you kidding me?
2 games.
2 games? What?
Yeah. I'll talk about the standings in another segment. But yeah, anyways, the Senators have won 0-3-0. And their first game against Toronto Maple Leafs, they lost 5-3. Against New York, they lost 4-1. And against St. Louis last night, they lost. Not last night. Whenever he played St. Louis, it was 6-4.
Why don't you tell the people who scored the first goal of the 2019-2020 season?
Brady Tkachuk.
There you go, bud.
30 seconds into the game. Not just the first goal as an Ottawa Senator this year, the first goal in the NHL.
So the Ottawa Senators will forever have that. So there you go.
Yeah. And it's funny because Brady Tkachuk also leads the NHL, not the NHL, but the Ottawa Senators in goals with two. Pageau and Connor Brown lead in assists with two. And in points, Brady Tkachuk, Bobby Ryan, and Scott Sabourin all have 2 points for the Ottawa Senators.
I'm going to tell you right now, my favorite player on the Coyotes is tied with Brady Tkachuk in terms of goals, so make of that what you will.
So who?
Connor Garland, after his two-goal performance Thursday night, which I was at, and I was freaking out and screaming, and it was amazing.
Yeah. Connor Garland is a story and a half. Last year, he got 2 goals in his first game, one by blocking a shot off his head. And the other one, what was the other one?
Well, I think it was a game in Canada. I don't remember if it was against Edmonton or Calgary. And he had been up for a couple of weeks or so. He wasn't in the league very long after all the injuries. And the first one, he blocked right off his damn head. And then he came back into the game and scored another goal later on.
And none of them he shot. They were both reflex off his head.
No, the second one, I think he just reflex off his stick. No. He's a really gritty like player for like – you would think he would play like Martin Saint-Louis, really small, really fast, more finesse. Yeah. But no, this dude gets into the corners and whatnot. He'll get in front of the net for some reason.
Yeah, but no, I remember that game. None of them were off his stick. One was off his head for sure, and the other one maybe could have been off his head or even off his skate, like bounced off his skate and went right in or something like that.
But I just say went off his penis and move on.
Not very PG, but okay.
That was very PG. That's a scientific term.
Okay. Anyways. Yeah. Now let's talk more about the NHL. But all the stats that I'm throwing to you guys, by the way, even the Ottawa ones, were before the games, before the October 12th games, because we're recording on October 12th to release on October 13th. So I'll talk about the standings right now. On my board, I have the standings for every team in the NHL. And I'll just start off with the Atlantic Division. Buffalo leads the Atlantic. 4 wins, 0 losses, 1 overtime loss, 9 points. Detroit is second in the Atlantic. 3-1-0, 6 points. Boston, 3-1-0, 6 points. Tampa, 2-1-1, 5 points. Toronto, 2-2-1, 5 points. Montreal, 1-1-2, 4 points. Florida, 1-2-1, 3 points. Ottawa, 0-3-0. Any comments on the Atlantic?
When did Buffalo get good again? Because they were good for a stretch last year, and then not. I forgot what happened there. And then wasn't the hockey guy talking about the people who are already angry in Tampa because they've lost those couple of games?
Yeah, I just watched that video, actually. Yeah. It's funny.
I mean, getting them, but
my comment is it's nice to see that some teams are starting off good, but it's only four. Like the team that's played the most games in the NHL right now has played 5 games, and it's only five games in their season. You can't really
saying Carolina's going to win the cup because they haven't lost a game yet.
Exactly.
It's too early to say.
Exactly. No offense to Carolina fans, but exactly.
I'm a Carolina fan. I love my Jerks. You know, I've had a soft spot for them for years, and last year I fully embraced them. But it would be the same thing as just saying that. Just way too early.
Oh, yeah. It's way too early to take anything. I'm sorry, but I don't think that Florida is going to finish 7th in the Atlantic.
Yeah, I think Florida will get it together. I don't know what's going on right now. I think most of the Florida fans follow on Twitter think it's defense. And then, of course, Bobrovsky is not playing very well.
And no offense to any Detroit fans, but I'm sorry, but Detroit is not finishing 2nd in the Atlantic this year.
I don't know why they're off such a hot start. I mean, I know they have talent. They've been rebuilding for a while. I'm glad they finally embraced the rebuild so they can actually, I love seeing competitive Detroit. I love back when I first started watching hockey, seeing, Detroit battling different teams and being a powerhouse and whatnot, Datsyuk, Zetterberg, all those guys. I want them to be competitive again, but when did they get the pieces and properly develop them to do this start?
Exactly. It's I guess it's I don't know. You can't give Steve Eisenman credit yet because like it's his first season as GM. But like Ken Holland did a good job by retooling while still remaining competitive. And it's like they've been rhetorically speaking, they've been bad for what 3 years, really. And they're already competing again. I don't think they're going to contend for play. Like, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year, but they're going to contend for a wild card spot. They're not going to make it, in my opinion, but they're going to contend for a spot. And, like, his mic's not working again, so I'll just move on to the Metropolitan now. Metropolitan, Carolina's 5-0 for 10 points. Fun fact, they lead the NHL right now. Washington second with 2-1-2, so 6 points. New York Rangers 2-0, 4 points. Mika Zibanejad, he's got 8 points in 2 games. He's on pace for 328 points right now. Philadelphia is 2-0, same 4 points. Pittsburgh is 2-2-0, 4 points. New York Islanders are 1-3-0, 2 points. Columbus 1-3-0, 2 points. New Jersey Devils 0-2-2, 2 points. My comments are Carolina's playing wicked good. I think they're gonna play good, but they're not gonna finish first in Metro, in my opinion. I think that Pittsburgh actually missed the playoffs this year, and that's not even just because of the injuries. I think that they've been good for long enough. I think that I think they're just gonna finally start regressing, and that's not a hate against Pittsburgh Penguins, but to be good, you can only be good for so long. I think they're gonna finally start slowing down, and I think they're gonna start need to think about a rebuild. They're never going to trade Sidney Crosby away, that's for sure. But soon they're going to have to start trading guys away like Chris Letang, maybe Malkin. But like they're going to start needing to actually rebuild. And it's inevitable, really. Especially when you trade guys like Daniel Sprong for like a bag of pucks or whatever they trade him for. And like Columbus, I'm not surprised. They lost key talent. They lost their goalie. They lost some of their forwards. It's insane. Like, yeah. And then New Jersey, they're new players, new team. So like, it's not new team, but like, new players on a different team. So like, it's going to take a little bit to kind of wiggle around. Then they're going to start being better again. Right now, the Eastern Conference wildcards are Tampa and Toronto. Central Division, St. Louis is 3-1-0 with 7 points. Colorado is 3-0-0 with 6 points. Nashville, 3-1-0, 6 points. Winnipeg, 3-2-0, 6 points. Dallas, 1-3-1, 3 points. Chicago, 0-2-0, 0 points. Minnesota, 0-3-0, 0 points. Minnesota kind of surprised me, but at the same time, not really. Like it's
they're not bad. I don't understand why they're still winless.
Pardon me?
They're not bad. They have some talent. I don't understand why they're still winless. They're not
bad at all, but like at the same time, like they're an older team. Like without trying to offend anybody, the older you get when it comes to hockey, the slower you're gonna start playing, the more you're gonna regress. It's just a fact.
He turned into the Los Angeles Kings.
Yeah, basically.
Or the Dallas Stars. I still find funny anyone that had Dallas going to the playoffs this year after they lost, you know, some young pieces and got older. I just clown emoji.
Your voice cut out there, so I'll have to ask you to repeat that.
So anyone that had Dallas going to the playoffs this year after they just got older, I just have to say clown emoji.
Oh, I mean, like, they got Joe Pavelski, for God's sake.
Yeah, and they got him at pretty much nothing.
Literally.
He's like, what? $3 million a year? Like, that's a steal.
No, $7 million a year for 3 years.
Never mind. I got mixed up.
Yeah.
It's still not bad. That's not bad for Wendelski.
He's a really good player. He's going to be playing on the second line, which I don't think he's used to because he's played on the first line in San Jose for a while now. But, like, as I think the players mentioned it, he's going through an adjustment phase because, like, after playing for the same team for, what, 13 years or whatever it was now. It's a different system, right? And, like, I just figured to mention it now. I'll mention the next division. And, like, essentially, like, yeah, it's It's tough to go to a new team when you play for the same team for so long. Different systems, different coaches, different players, and you have to build all new chemistry, all that. And then yeah. And Minnesota Wilds, it just you have to rebuild. Like you have to stop trying to be competitive. It's not working. You just not
well, they realistically can't rebuild unless they find a way to offload the Suter and Parise contracts.
They're not even trying. Like, not even just worry about Parise and Suter. Try to trade other guys. Try to trade Jason Zucker. Try to trade trade someone. Trade Eric Staal. Trade not trade Mikko Koivu. Let him retire. But like some of the guys.
Just re-sign Eric Staal?
Pardon me? No, I don't. They re-sign him not this year, but last year. I think his contract is up this year.
All right.
Yeah.
So it'll be a deadline deal.
Pardon me?
It'll be a deadline deal. Exactly. For anyone that needs like a center depth later on.
Exactly. Like, it's – you need to rebuild. It's inevitable. You know, like I mentioned for Pittsburgh, I don't know if you heard it or not, but Pittsburgh's going to need to start thinking about a rebuild soon.
Well, yeah, because realistically speaking, let's be honest here, as much as – you know, I've always preferred Ovechkin to Crosby. I'll disclose that there. But as great as Crosby is, him and Malkin can't single-handedly carry a team while they're in their mid-30s.
Exactly. I mean, Crosby's only 31, but still.
I don't want to say moving forward, they're not going to be able to, like, keep having them bail them out, and especially with a lot of the bad contracts and a lot of the questionable moves.
Yeah.
Just blow it up, get rid of Gino, get rid of most of your guys, let Crosby retire a Penguin, and just embrace the rebuild. So that way, when you're rebuilding, you can have – that first ballot Hall of Famer and Sidney Crosby to be there to mentor the younger guys.
Exactly. And I'm certain Malkin's going to be another first ballot Hall of Famer too.
Oh yeah, straight up. He will be too. I just realistically, if you're going to trade one, you're going to trade Malkin. You would never get rid of Crosby.
Oh, exactly. But like, I don't think they tried either of those pieces. I think you trade everybody else except for Malkin and Crosby.
I can see that, because then you'll still have your two elite centers at number one and number two to train everyone else.
Yeah, but it's not even because of that. It's because Malkin and Crosby have developed such a friendship over the years. At this point, they're basically brothers.
Oh, you trade one, you piss off the other.
Yeah. And, like, last offseason, they tried trading Malkin, and Crosby literally went up to the front office and said, if you trade Malkin, I'm done.
And that's why Phil Kessel got traded this offseason.
That is why. Exactly.
It benefits me, so I'm perfectly okay with that. I love having Phil over here. Are you ready to go to the Pacific Division so I can unload on some of my rivals that are trash this year?
Yes, let's do it now. Edmonton leads the division 4-0, 8 points. James Neal, 7 goals. Wow.
Look, did I not tell people, especially the offseason over Twitter, that he didn't fit in the bottom six of Calgary and he was going to play
that? Exactly. What I've been saying. That's exactly what I've been saying. I've been telling people he just had a body he didn't fit. And, like, it doesn't help that he have, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins or Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl feeding you the puck. It helps.
Oh, yeah, it does. It does help have those three guys feeding you pucks.
Oh, yeah. But, like, at the same time, he is a skilled player. He's proven that he's been able to score 40 goals before. And if Kenny Malkin on his line, funny thing. He's a good leader, which is what Edmonton needs. They've got good guys, but like you need a guy who can step up and be a leader in the locker room. They have leaders. They have
a ragtag group of guys to a Stanley Cup final the year of their expansion draft.
Pardon me? Like, exactly.
He shows that leadership ability, and that, I think that's probably what the missing piece was. That and maybe a couple more defensive pieces, but it seems like they're running fine right now. So let's just Edmonton. They're fun because it is fun watching them right now.
Oh yeah, Anaheim second division. They're 4-1-1, 8 points. Calgary's 2-1-1 with 5 points. Vegas is 2-2-0 with 4 points. Vancouver's 1-2-0, 2 points. Arizona's 1-2-0, 2 points. LA is 1-2-0, 2 points. San Jose is 1-4-0, 2 points. As a Sens fan, I love seeing San Jose third last in the NHL, fourth last in the NHL.
As a Coyotes fan, and of course as a Vegas fan, I love seeing San Jose down there. I love seeing LA down there. I don't think we're going to be alienating too many people that we're going to listen to this by saying that San Jose and LA can suck it.
Yeah. Like, realistically, I think the Pacific by the end of the year goes like something like Vegas, Edmonton, and maybe even Arizona, I think.
You think Calgary is gonna flame out?
I think they're gonna make wild card.
Wild card, bold prediction. I think Arizona makes the wild card. Calgary gets top three in the division, mainly because I think Calgary, they've had their core together a little longer in terms of it, where Arizona, they still have inconsistencies and a lot of things that I heavily criticize on my YouTube channel. So,
yeah, you're going to have to repeat that, though, because your voice just went blank there.
All of it, or where did it go blank?
Your voice cut out there again. So, yeah. Well, I wait for him. I'm going to mention my things. Edmonton, James Neal. Like, last year he scored 7 goals in 63 games. This year, in, like, 4 games, he has 7 goals. Anaheim. I think it's... Okay, you're back. Go ahead.
All right. I'm pretty sure Edmonton won the trade.
Oh, yeah. They for sure won the trade.
All right, I was asking what part cut out, so I know what to repeat.
Basically everything before Arizona.
Before Arizona? So it's just Calgary's had their core together longer in terms of while it was clicking. Yeah. So I think that they're going to be more consistent, and Arizona still has a bunch of things that I heavily criticize. So I still think Arizona makes a wild card. Calgary gets top three of the division. I'm just not sure what spot of the three.
That's fair. But essentially, the wild cards right now are Vegas and Winnipeg.
Ooh, Vegas is a wild card right now? Well, there are 2-2. It makes sense.
Yeah. And, like, okay, who do you think leads the NHL in points right now?
In points? My go-to is always either Alexander the Great or Connor McJesus, but I want to say James Neal because of 7 goals.
No, James Neal leads the NHL in goals, 7 goals, but McDavid leads the NHL in assists, 7 assists.
Nice.
Yep. Points-wise, listen to this. Points-wise, McDavid is 10. He's tied with Patrick Laine.
Oh, yeah, with him just getting that drive that, like, anyone that watched Winnipeg last year versus this year can tell you he just looks like a different player.
Oh, yeah.
Like, straight up, like I'm kind of glad, as someone who's kind of critical of them wanting to re-sign him instead of, you know, readdressing that defensive situation, but he's come out with a fire.
Oh, yeah. It's even last, though, because, like, last year, in the first month or so, he had, like, 30, like, 20 goals in the first month. We know what happened after that.
It's just Fortnite. I think Fortnite happened, wasn't that it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's literally it.
Fortnite's the worst thing to ever, like, bless, oh, man.
I don't play it. I just don't like it. But, like, yeah, it's insane how much an off season can change you.
I mean, I guess having a disappointing season and having pretty unanimously the NHL saying you kind of suck can light a fire under you.
Yeah. And, like, he's playing for $6.5 million right now.
I think that's a really good contract, to be honest, especially with the fire he's coming out with now.
Yeah.
Winnipeg won the contract, by the way. If he keeps this up, Winnipeg won the contract.
At the same time, I think it's a bad contract, too, and I'll tell you why.
All right.
Only a 2-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
What happens at the end of the 2-year contract? Well, how much is he going to want?
If he keeps playing like this, I'm going to say at least 10 a year.
Exactly. They don't have the money for that.
Maybe in 2 years they might, when they sacrifice the rest of their defense and do what everyone else does, like San Jose, and then give up all your defense and depth for, like, two players.
Dude, this year's Winnipeg defense, none of the Winnipeg defense of this year played in the NHL last year. They're all in the AHL or ECHL.
You want to run that by me again? Because I thought that one of the guys they acquired played for, like, New York last year.
Oh, yeah, Neil Pionk. Other than that, everybody else played in the AHL.
That's ridiculous.
Yep.
That's ridiculous.
Yep. And, like, who was under Trevor? Nathan Beaulieu, I think, is on your top pair.
Oof.
Nathan freaking Beaulieu. Like, I love Nathan Beaulieu. Like, I love him.
But, he's good, but isn't he? He's more of like a middle to bottom pairing defenseman.
Yeah, he's a top six guy at best.
Maybe a seventh guy at worst.
Easily. Like, it's sad. Like, I really hope Bufflin comes back.
I don't, because then they would have to terminate a contract. I think he would put him over the edge. Like, the only reason they were allowed to sign Laine and Connor was because the LTIR.
No, they're still good.
Still good?
I think I'm pretty sure they are.
But I heard from multiple sources that was the only reason that they had the room to sign them, unless it was both those guys just signed for less than what everyone was projecting they were going to sign for.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. They signed for less. Everybody was thinking Laine was going to sign for $11 million.
That's what I was thinking. And I was like, why don't you use that to get two top four defensemen?
Exactly. And, like, they need defense. Like, offense, they've got one of the better offense in the league, in my opinion. But defense, it's worse than Ottawa's defense.
It's kind of the Toronto problem for the last couple of years, where
they have Jake Muzzin on, like, the third pair, I think it is. No, he's on the second pair, actually. No, yeah, he is on the third pair. Guess how much ice time Cody Ceci's playing.
My knowledge, he should be on the bottom pair, so I'd assume.
On the top pair of Morgan Riley.
Cody Ceci's on the top pair.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Why, Mike Babcock? Why?
Cece's not terrible, but...
No, he's terrible.
Top line? Look, I want to give the guy the benefit of the doubt, all right?
He's god-awful. I've watched him for years and years and years. He can't do a damn thing right.
Can he at least, like, pass the puck?
No.
Can he at least, like, skate up and down the ice?
Barely.
So, he's a good skater.
It's all he's got. All I can do is skate. The thing of Cody Ceci is, when he was in the OHL, he was an offensive defenseman. He was regarded to be the next Erik Karlsson, basically. But Ottawa decided they didn't want another Erik Karlsson. They wanted a Marc-Edouard Vlasic. They wanted a Ryan Suter. They wanted to turn Cody Ceci from an offensive dynamo into a guy that doesn't shoot the puck, doesn't pass the puck. All he does, they turn him from a really good offensive defenseman to a mediocre stay-at-home defenseman.
So they tried to turn him into Nick Hjalmarsson and ended up turning him into a pylon.
Basically.
That's sad.
I love Brian Murray to death, but I blame Brian Murray for that.
I mean, we've seen with multiple players, I think it's fair to say Peter Mueller, that if you don't develop them right, you just kind of ruin them.
Yeah, exactly. It goes to show that you can't draft a guy to be a completely different player. Yes, you can draft a guy to fix him, make him better, but you can't change his 100% game. You can do some.
But again, that doesn't happen very often.
Still, if a guy has been shooting pucks, passing pucks, creating plays his entire life, is asked to do the exact opposite, 9 times out of 10, he will be able to.
That's not wrong. I'm not gonna refute that. I think it's more so like a football thing where people will transition positions and play well than hockey.
Yeah, it's like a center can play wing, but a wing can't play center.
Yeah, center is a whole different position. It's way more responsibility. You're essentially also calling plays, I guess, is the best way to put it. Like, telling guys where you want them on the ice or who to catch up on, or if you're going to pick someone up, so they got to pick someone else up. You're the quarterback of the line, essentially.
Essentially. Like, I can tell you that. I play hockey this year. I'm a winger. I asked my buddy if I could play center for just a shift. It is such a different game.
You're responsible for not only the play calling, but also more defense than any winger is ever going to be asked to pick up.
Yeah.
And you're responsible for producing some offense, getting it out of the zone, establishing puck possession. There's a lot that goes into being a center.
Yeah. It's not just playing in the middle lanes. It's not just playing from the side lanes to the middle lanes. That's what people think it is. But playing center is a complete different ball game than playing winger.
It's kind of like saying that a running back can play receiver very easily. It's two different positions that have two different mindsets and responsibilities to them.
Mm. And like, that is why centers are usually regarded as the best players in the NHL.
Yeah, why do you think they get paid the most? Why do you think whenever you break down depth charts and you put your centers, you know, where they're supposed to be, you're going to see the number one center gets paid X amount, and then the second line center gets paid X amount, which is usually equivalent to or a little bit more than the first line wingers, and then it keeps going like that.
Yeah.
Very valuable position, very underrated for, like, casual hockey fan.
Yeah. And, like, now it's going a little bit of some drama, or news, I guess.
Ooh, drama.
Yeah. Drew Doughty.
Oh, I saw this. Just do it. Do it to him, boy.
Which one?
Where was it Vancouver he was trash talking that they shouldn't be able to beat us or we shouldn't lose to a team like that?
Yeah. His first piece of drama this year. We all know that Matthew Tkachuk and Drew Doughty hate each other. We know that. But Drew Doughty went as far to say is, we all know who is a better player, referring to himself. I'm sorry, Drew Doughty, but you're not worth $11 million. You're barely even worth $7 million. For the last couple of years, you've been declining every single year. The only reason why you won the Norris Trophy that one time against Erik Karlsson, if I might add, I'm still mad about that. The only reason why you got the Norris that year is because you never got it before. That's literally it. I was so mad when Erik Karlsson lost to Drew Doughty that year. That year, Erik Karlsson was the best defenseman in the NHL. Drew Doughty, I'm sorry, but you're barely even a top four defenseman anymore. You've gotten so bad over the years. You're a defensive liability. You're an offensive liability. You can't do anything anymore. You're a shell of your former self. So please take those comments and shove them somewhere else. Because I'm sorry, but Matthew Tkachuk has more impact on the game than you do. Matthew Tkachuk is more of a flashier player than you are. Matthew Tkachuk has a better temperament than you do. Anybody who puts themselves, says he's better than somewhere else, is trash. And then there is Vancouver should not be beating a team like ours, quote. I'm sorry, but you had 51 losses last year. No. I look at the standings. Vancouver has the same. You and Vancouver have actually the same record right now. But, like, no. Vancouver is a better team than LA any day of the week this year. Same thing as last year. I rest my case on that one. It's getting me pissed off. If you want to keep talking about it when you come back, go right ahead. But in other words, I'm going to switch to my next segment. If I were in charge. If I were in charge, it's basically me. If I were the general manager or the head coach of the Ottawa Senators. Are you back?
I'm still – I was trying to talk.
Yeah, no, your mic wasn't working. So I'll go back to you. Did you hear what I said?
Yeah, I heard what you said, and I was like essentially – Vancouver would win in a seven-game series, without a doubt. I think LA maybe gets one game because of their grindy style at a seven-game series. They're literally talking as if they were a bottom-two team last year. They just need to shut up. Anyone on the Kings can't claim to be better than anyone else.
No, they can't. And did you hear my comments about the Matthew Tkachuk incident?
Oh, yeah, where he's just – he's in there trying to. Well, he says that he knows who the better player is, and Matthew Tkachuk not only is finally hitting his stride in terms of him being completely elite. So that's factually incorrect. But the fact that he's gonna have a higher impact, like you pointed out, on a team than Drew Doughty will, and Doughty's only usefulness now is his slap shot from the point.
Basically,
That's about it. And he's getting paid $11 million, and it's because of the Kings that this league is going to go downhill.
Oh yeah.
Every big contract is why this league is going to fold.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Is that all for that, or can I go to the next segment?
Yeah, that's all I have for that. I just wanted to laugh at Drew Doughty a little
Yeah,
bit.
yeah. So my lines for Yada Centers, I would go as first line, Brady Tkachuk, Colin White, Vladislav Mesnikov. I think Mesnikov is a good playmaker for Tkachuk and White to play with. And on the second line, I have kind of an alternating thing. On the odd game, I want Abramov, and I want Tyler Ennis to alternate on the first line. On the second line, then goes Tierney and Duclair. Ennis is not a top six player, no. He's a depth player that can play up and down the lineup if you need him to. But Abramov is a prospect. You want to give him as many shots as you can to make an impact. But at the same time, you don't want to overwhelm him. So I'd say give him maybe two games and then sit him for one. Then let Ennis play that game in that spot. Duclair, he's getting better as he's gonna be good this year. He basically scored like 20 goals last year, and he's finally hitting his strides. On the third line, I have the same idea for alternating Bolsters and Bodker. Bodker's probably gonna get traded. If we're all being real here, he's gonna get traded. But for now, I want an alternative Bolster so Bolsters does not have too much of a workload. Then I want Pajot and Connor Brown on the fourth line, basically Scott Sabourin and Artem Anisimov and Bobby Ryan. Artem Anisimov, like I liked the trade at the time, but looking at it now, Artem Anisimov does not have a spot in the Ottawa Senators. He's ideally at best a middle six center, ideal third line center who can play second line every now and then if you need him to. I'm sorry, but Artem Anisimov is not a fourth line center, and Pajot is not a fourth line center either. So I'd rather have the younger guy, who means more to the team than Artem Anisimov. So I think Artem Anisimov is eventually going to get traded, but for now I have him on the fourth line. Defensively, I kind of have it the same way: Chabot and Zaitsev, Hainsey and Brännström, and Borowiecki and DeMelo. Same pairs as it is right now. And speaking, if I were GM, what I would do is I would trade out Mikhail Bodker and Artem Anisimov. What I would do is, yeah, and then I would play Logan Brown at the fourth line center, alternate him with Pajot as Brown gets better. One game have Pajot third line, one game have him fourth line, vice versa with Brown. You know, that's what I would do. And as a mock trade, I didn't spend too much time on this. Like, it's probably a little much, but I would send Bodker to Colorado because Colorado, they have good centers, but not necessarily the best wingers. They have a good first line wings, but on the second line is when they kind of drop off. So he would be an ideal, maybe second liner for Colorado with Nazem Kadri there. You know, so I think that'd be a good thing there, and I would like ask for maybe even a third or a second round pick. Nothing is insane, just a draft pick, you know. And that's where I have it there for that. Your turn for you. You can take over for your Arizona Coyotes. But first, I'd like to ask you, why do you cheer for the Arizona Coyotes, and what is your story to how you started cheering for hockey in the first place?
All right, first I want to make sure my mic is working. Is my mic working?
Yep.
So. Sorry about all the background noise. My two dogs are stepping on each other and just whatever. So, back around 2006, my dad bought me a couple of video games, like NHL Hits 2003 and NHL 06, and he started talking about the Coyotes because he cheered for them and whatnot. And I watched them casually, played the video games, kind of got me attached. Then I got to go to a couple of games, and it really, you know, the 06 07 season, the decade in the desert year where we were just terrible. The last game of the year, April 8th. On my birthday, I think it was my 11th or 12th. I don't know. It's been like 12 years, so I'll just say 11th as a placeholder. And I got to meet Shane Doan after the game, and as the Coyotes actually won, it was a really fun day, and that kind of like established me really being a fan of this team. And then my dad started working at the arena, and I started going to every game. He had season tickets, and just this game and this team just kind of took over my life essentially, all the way up until I was about a senior in high school.
I respect that. I like that story a lot. It's a good story. Nice.
All right, and then I'll just kind of I'll try to keep it under 10 minutes. I'll just ramble about the Coyotes for a little bit. The only thing I really don't like about their lines that they kept in Christian Fisher as opposed to Lawson Crouch. I think Crouch is just a better forward as a whole. But then again, I noted in my Coyotes report for the Vegas game, Fisher looked really good in that game. It's only one game out of three he's looked good in so far, but I will give credit where credit's due. That's what critics do. We criticize when things are bad, and we give praise when things are good. And for the most part, I'm loving all the lines. I like how they finally put Hayton in the lineup, and they have been playing with Devo, because Dvorak didn't look like he existed for the first two games, and putting him with Schmaltz and Hayton kind of invigorated that really nice play by Hayton over to Dvorak and Dvorak to Schmaltz. That was just probably one of the nicest goals I've seen in the past 10 years. That was some good stuff. That really was. And, you know, I like how things are starting to mesh. I don't like how the first line seemed to kind of wither a bit in that last game against Vegas, because that was a game that, in my opinion, was more of a you need to step up kind of a thing, because they were playing really well the first two games. Of course, getting the first goal of the season from Stepan, where Kelly goes over to Kessel to Stepan, great play. But since then, they've just been generating some opportunities, some shots, but not looking as advertised. I want to see them kind of start to mesh a little bit more in terms of generating more goal-scoring opportunities. I love most of the defensive pairings. Even someone like Goligoski, who I couldn't stand last year, is just playing really well right now. This defense, the one thing Coach Tockett's always done well, and I've always praised him for this, even though I'm not his biggest fan, is his defensive schemes. And he will always, you know, I'm not going to worry if there's a breakaway or something, because your defense is already so good that the goaltender is not going to have to face like 35 shots by the end of the game. So one or two breakaways isn't going to kill you, something like that. And that's not even what happens. I haven't even seen him giving up like a pure breakaway yet this season. But it might have happened. I just might have forgot about it. Just being fair. And, of course, my boy, my dude, Connor Garland, my elite top six forward, is the leading goal scorer with two after that fantastic two-goal performance, like I mentioned earlier. And Connor, please call me. Why won't you return my calls? It's getting a little sad. Oh, and then also Keller has two assists. I want to put that out there, too. He's producing. He hasn't looked as good as I'd like, but he's doing little things. And I just want to give some praise to that, that he's playing a little more defense. He's applying a little more pressure. He's passing a little smarter. And even if it is just barely better than last season, I'll take it, because I genuinely want the kid to be as advertised. If he's here for the next 8 years, I want him to be that leading winger, and I want him to kind of lead us into the playoffs and have a couple good runs with him.
Yeah, so I'll cut you off there. I know last year you and I had a debate about Clayton Keller. Do you want to tell us your opinion on Clayton Keller as a player?
Give yours first.
I mean, I'm going to be real. I don't watch Arizona as much as I should. This year, I don't have any time at all to watch many hockey games. I can barely even watch Sens games if I'm lucky. But, like, from what I've been told, I like Clayton Keller. I do like him. But, like, he's a young guy who could be better. You know, he's could be better, you know? That's my opinion on him.
My opinion as someone who has been watching him all last year and just this year in the training camp and all that, I don't know if you watch basketball, but he's just Devin Booker. He is just a good player that fits one very specific role that, because Arizona sports fans aren't – we never have high standards. Like, we only have one major four championship in this state, and that's the Arizona Diamondbacks. And every other small championship we get, no one seems to care about. Arizona Rattlers, by the way. Had to give a little plug. But he's just good. He's talented. He can be elite. He can take that next step. But I feel like he's getting too many excuses for him. All last year, it was turning pucks over, forcing bad passes, missing empty nets, not playing any defense. And look, my wingers, I always give benefit of the doubt when it comes to wingers playing defense, because that's not their job. Just, you know, put a little bit of pressure, get a stick somewhere, you know, just try to do something. But it's mainly the center and your two defensemen. But just the fact that he literally was a liability on both ends of the ice for so much last year and was still the leading scorer frustrated me, because then everyone that, you know, would see my opinions on it would say, oh, you're wrong. And without Clayton Keller, the Coyotes would be nothing. Or without Clayton Keller, this or that, and Clayton Keller's your leading scorer. I'm like, yeah, but half the team is spending at least 20 games on IR. I, I, I would hope that the one guy who played all 82 games would lead the team, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, I desperately want this kid to finally be what we've been looking for. What Kyle Turris wasn't here. What Peter Mueller wasn't here. What guys like Enver Leeson and Mikkel Boedker couldn't be. I want that star top six guy that can put the puck in the net and set up at least, you know, 20 to 40 assists a season. That's all I want. And it just, he's just too much of a liability on the other ends of the ice. I want him to have an overall game. I don't need you to score 82 points. Just have a good overall game and score 60 or so.
I respect that. I really do. And you said something that kind of intrigued me here. Something like about Kyle Turris. Do you want to repeat that?
And yeah, essentially more on it? What Kyle Turris couldn't be here. What he was never – we wanted him to be at least top two center. And he just never developed into that as a Coyote. It was only when after he left, he started playing better and kind of established himself more. And especially in, like, Ottawa, where he was actually a heavily valued part of the team.
Yeah, he was their first-line center after Gene Spetsiev. And I'm sorry, but I'd prefer to have Kyle Turris over Derek.
I mean, I would, too, because Kyle Turris is better than Broussard, in my opinion. Did we cut out?
I want Otter to find a way to bring him back. Because he'd be a perfect, perfect first-line center for the rebuild. And once Colin White fills his potential, have Kyle Turris as a second-line center. That would be perfect. You know, like, when we did that Matt Duchene trade. Sure, it was nice bringing Matt Duchene, but like I would have rather had given up Derek Brassard than Kyle Turris.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, doesn't Turris not fit in Nashville?
No. In the first year, he was amazing in Nashville, but he hasn't really fit in since. I think, like, yes, Brassard offensively was a little better than Kyle Turris, but overall, Kyle Turris was and still is a better player than And then Derek Brassard. Kyle Turris is still amazing. He still is. He's just not fitting in.
And that happens. You get a guy in a system that doesn't fit him, and even though he has all the skill and potential, he just doesn't live up.
Yeah. And he's going to get traded from Nashville. It's a wait. It's going to happen.
I'm surprised they didn't trade him out instead of PK Subban, because it would have made more sense when you're trying to acquire Duchene in a center to trade away a center instead of your power play quarterback.
Yeah, but
I mean, I get that Subban's never been an elite defenseman or anything, but not bad. Especially for, you know, the offensive upside, his defensive side isn't bad.
Yeah, I agree. But, like, the reason why they didn't trade Kyle Turris is because he couldn't find a suitor. As of right now, Kyle Turris's value in the league is so low. And I like right now he's basically like what he's looked at as right now by the NHL is another Louis Erickson, just still somewhat capable of playing in the NHL, but he hasn't fit in at all. And I feel so bad for him because I've hung out with the guy a bunch of times in person. He's such a nice guy. I've been to his house. He's easily the nicest guy I've ever met. And it sucks to see that he's not having the best time in Nashville.
But yeah, so that's all I really got on the Coyotes. Is they need to keep scoring. Elite defense, great goaltending. Antti Raanta plays his first game. If this is going up tomorrow, so it would be tonight.
Yeah,
he's playing his first game. And look, I'm just gonna let myself be cynical because I'm kind of tired of the Coyotes, you know, flip flopping fans when it comes to Antti Raanta. Where I criticized him last year, I get told I'm wrong. He gets injured multiple times and only plays like what, less than 20 games or something like that. And then he's injured to start this season still, and then I'm still wrong, but Antti Raanta's an injury-prone liability, but I'm still wrong. They'll screw that. Coyotes fans need to actually learn hockey and accept facts. I'm so glad it's against Colorado because I want to see him give up, like, 6 goals. I want to see him, just like his first game back, get torched so that way people can't be like, oh, well, you know, what's your excuse now? Is his first game back? Well, he still needs to play better.
Yeah.
He's been skating and rehabbing since at least March. Yeah. They were posting videos of it last year on Twitter showing him skating around. If he's still not NHL ready at that point, what are you paying $4.25 million a year for?
Yeah. See, in my opinion, I think that he's a good goaltender. He's not as good as people say he is, and he is very, very injury prone. And like, I hate to say it, but he seems to be a nice guy, and he can be really good. He just hasn't had the chance to, you know, because he gets injured all the time.
Yeah, and it's just, he has all the skill in the world, but he works best as a backup.
Exactly.
We rely on him. I call it, you know, the Rick DiPietro glass knee syndrome, where you're just too fragile to play that many games.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I love Aniranta. He's amazing goaltender.
He's good. I like him. I just hate his contract. That's right. It. That's the only reason I'm this critical, is because that contract was bad. And they signed him to a 3-year extension after a year where he played his career high of 47 games and spent half the year on IR, essentially.
Yeah.
It was just a bad contract.
I kind of find it funny how ex-Ranger backups, their first year as a starter, it's really, really good. But in that, they're either injured or trash. Cam Talbot.
Cam Talbot.
Just had to throw it out there.
I mean, I respect it. I respect it.
Yeah. And I love Cam Talbot, don't get me wrong. He's not as good he's not as good as he can be.
I think it's the Henrik Lundqvist effect, where he'll teach you just enough to be on your own for a year, but he doesn't teach you enough to keep it.
It's not even that. It's just that it's when you're playing as the backup to Henrik Lundqvist and you have a chance to be a starter, you want to be as good as Lundqvist, if not better. So it kind of motivates you. But people can only ever seem to use that energy for 1 year. It's like Andrew Hammond, where he was a friggin' legendary for that 1 year. 20-0-1 was his record, literally. It's just, he can't seem to replicate it after that.
Because you can't top Hank.
You can't.
You're cutting out, bud.
Pardon me?
You were cutting out.
So basically, you can use your energy to top Hank. You just can't be better than Hank.
Exactly.
Yeah. And on that note, I think it's a good time to end today's podcast. We've been on for basically an hour and 15 minutes. I think it's good. Good length for the first episode.
Yeah, at least an hour. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I wasn't sure of your format, so I thought it was going to be like a 30-minute thing, but that's completely fine.
No, I'm good at elongating things, I guess, or elongating. Is that even a word?
Yeah, to elongate. Like, you know, if you ever watched The Flash Season 3, you got the elongated man.
But yeah, I'm really good at, like, turning what seems to be nothing into this whole shebang, you know?
I got you. I mean, then again, for the Coyotes versus Boston report, the 1-0 final where my opinions were literally the Coyotes played okay, but they needed to score, and I don't care if you know, they ran into a hot goaltender, you still need to find a way to score for your playoff team. I turned that 3 minutes of content into, like, 7.
Yeah. That's honestly what you have to do sometimes. Anyways, that's what I'm going to call it for this episode. So just remember, you can plug yourself again once, Matt, if you want.
Matthew Jacobson on YouTube, at MJacobsonAZ on Twitter, and also write for the Puck Authority.
Nice. Anyways, that's where you can find Matt. Where you can find me is at GrunlickYogs or at SomeSense on Twitter and GrunlickYogs on YouTube. And obviously, Talking Some Sense podcast on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, and a bunch of other things. That is it for today. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for having me on. I'm going to go shower now.
Yep. All right. See you guys. Have a good week.